available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC.
We are the Podcast of Champions. Welcome, everyone, back to Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together we make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Pac-12 football. You know, June 21st, that's when you want to talk Pac-12 football,
it's
right, David?
It's the 20th.
Is it the 20th?
Oh, yeah.
Sorry. June
Whatever.
20th. I'm just going to the future.
Who cares? When's the first day of summer?
Is it the 22nd? That's like the solstice, right? That's like the longest day of the year? Or tomorrow's the longest day of the year, maybe?
Tomorrow is the first day of summer.
First day of summer?
Come on.
And then
is it ever the 22nd?
That's like when it transitions over or whatever, the longest
Jeez
day.
Louise.
My birthday is December 22nd, so I'm like the shortest day of the year or one of them. Now it's like the longest day. So this is, which is a little depressing. This is as much sunlight as we're going to get. It just gets darker and darker every day until December.
Good God.
Is that a morbid way to look at it?
Wow.
Well, we don't want a morbid way to look at this, especially this Pac-12 media deal.
Also, fall's a much better season anyway.
Fall, especially in Southern California. Yeah.
Summer sucks.
Summer here is not that great. Well, I mean, it's a few like mild temperatures and stuff. Overcast. Did you watch the U.S. Open, David?
What?
The U.S. Open, man. L.A. Country
No.
Club.
No.
Yeah, showcasing Southern California. Yeah, we got.
I've been to that though.
The U.S. Open or the LA Country Club?
The LA Country Club.
Oh
no, I've been to like PGA events there.
Oh, nice!
It's a lot of fun.
I've never been.
Yeah, recommend it.
Riviera is cool, but I've not been to LA Country Club. So
yeah.
Anyway, yeah, we got a fun show for you today. Lots of little newsy things going around in the Pac-12. If you have any questions or comments for the show, you can drop us an email: Pac-12podcast@gmail.com. You can also call or text us at 424-532-0678, and you can tweet us at Pac-12 Podcast. The website, of course, thing that I update, David never looks at, Pac-12podcast.com. Yeah, go over there. Check
out
all the old
episodes. What's wrong with my camera today? What'd you do?
Is there something wrong with your camera? Hold on.
It's like looking down at me.
Is it looking down?
It feels like it. Like I'm looking at the feed on the video, and I don't know.
Maybe lower your seat a little. You want me to? I don't know.
Ah, jeez, I don't know.
I'm not
sure. No, my seat's as low as it goes, buddy. Uh-huh. I think you screwed this up.
Yes, my whole setup here that you just watched.
I ask you to do one damn thing, and suddenly,
like everything.
Suddenly, we're just we're off.
It's crazy.
Good God.
Hey, do you like listening to the show? You should subscribe to it. That's awesome.
Yeah.
If you have like the Apple Podcasting app. They call it a follow, but whatever. Subscribe to it. You know, make sure when that updates on your iPhone, boom, you see the Podcast of Champions when we do a new episode. But you should also leave us a 5-star review, and you can trash us, whatever you want. We won't even say in that review, but that rating is important. The 5 stars is important. Do we have any new ones of those, David?
We do.
Oh, good.
All right. This is.
It's funny. I ask people think that I know the answer. I definitely do not know the answer.
This is a 5-star review from Lil Tekka up next.
Huh.
David Woods, call me Ishmael. Some years ago, never mind how long precisely, having little or no money in my purse and nothing particularly to interest me on shore, I thought I would sail about a little and see the watery part of the world. It is a way I have of driving off the spleen and regulating the circulation. Whenever I find myself growing grim about the mouth, whenever it is a damp, drizzly November in my soul, whenever I find myself involuntarily pausing before coffin warehouses, and bringing up the rear of every funeral I meet, and especially whenever my hypos get such an upper hand on me that it requires a strong moral principle to prevent me from deliberately stepping into the street and methodically knocking people's hats off, then I account it high time to get to sea as soon as I can. This is my substitute for pistol and ball. With a philosophical flourish, Cato throws himself upon his sword. I quietly take to the ship.
Sword.
Sword. There is nothing surprising in this. If they but knew it, almost all men in their degree, sometime or other, cherish very nearly the same feelings towards the ocean with me. There now is your insular city of the Manhattoes, belted round by wharves as Indian Isles by coral reefs. Commerce surrounds it with her surf. Right and left, the streets take you waterward. Its extreme downtown is the Battery, where that noble mole is washed by waves and cooled by breezes, which a few hours previous were out of sight of land. Look at the crowds of water gazers there. Circumambulate the city of a dreamy Sabbath afternoon.
How long is this one?
Go from Corlear's Hook to Coenties Slip, and from thence to Whitehall northward. What do you see? Posted like silent sentinels all around the town, strand thousands upon thousands of mortal men fixed in ocean reveries, some leaning against the spiles, some seated upon the pierhead, some looking over the bulwarks of ships from China, some high aloft in the rigging, as if striving to get a still better seaward peep. But these are all landsmen of weeks, days spent pent up in lathe and plaster, tied to counters, nailed to benches, clinched to desks. How then is this? Are the green fields gone? What do they hear? Thank you for that.
Wow.
That was...
lathe is a cool word.
A little bit of Moby Dick for you.
A little Moby Dick. I like lathe. Lathe is just a cool word.
We love it, don't we, folks?
Never use it, but...
I think that's it, actually.
Oh, nice. That was a 5-star one, right?
That was a 5-star review.
Perfect. Well, if you were watching on YouTube, thanks for that. Just like watching David read and me making faces, because that was very... it was a nice reading Moby Dick passage, which is great.
Moby Dick, very underrated. Like, it's rated, but people think it's very boring. It's actually not very boring. It's very fun.
No, I just read Moby Dick. Not that, I mean, it's sea related. Jaws came out, I think it was like 48 years ago or something, whatever it was, the anniversary. And someone, one of the movie Twitters, like tweeted a whole thread on like how it was made and like all the actors they were trying to get and all the fighting and all the stuff, you know, the shark not working. And the shark doesn't come into the scene until like an hour and 20 minutes into the movie. Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And I guess the movie was better than the book. The book, they had some weird stuff in there, and they just made some better stuff in the movie. The best thing being the USS Indianapolis speech when was it Quint? Yeah, Quint like gives the story about, you know, them delivering the Hiroshima bomb and two torpedoes into our side, and 1,100 men went in the water, 325 came out, or whatever it was. Like, that's an awesome speech. I guess it was like a 1-pager, then they read it like a 10-pager, and then they cut it down to like 4, and that's what they used in the movie. It was really good. So
awesome.
Scott wants to know, and if you are watching on YouTube, thank you very much. We are broadcasting.
Thank you, Brock. Live. No, Brock's supporting me.
Is Brock saying that?
Look at Brock.
Dave's camera seems higher. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll look at that. Alex says, so where did Ryan go on vacation last week, causing no episode? I went fishing on Friday, but that was like a day trip. David went on vacation.
Yeah, so. I was in North Carolina. Beautiful, sunny North Carolina.
Right, where I always go there for my vacation.
Yeah, so who doesn't?
Makes a lot of sense. But if you're watching on YouTube, thank you. Please smash the like button and subscribe over there. There's a little bell. You can get notified when we go live. And if you have any questions for the show, you can put question in there, and I'll try to star that. And go forward. And I'll, you know, next time David talks, I'll like work on his camera a little bit. I don't know. I was just trying to help him out. Am I like centered here? I'll center me a little bit too.
Yeah, fix yours first. Why wouldn't you?
Well, it's really easy. I can do good that. God. I got to like move over here and get off camera and stuff. Whatever. Here, you can see. Look, does anything look different? Look at us. We're both in the studio. Does something look different? I don't know. I'm not sure what it is. Well, we should probably get rid of that while we're not on the screen. David.
Ryan.
Did you have a good vacation?
I had a great vacation.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Fun?
Yeah. Right. You went fishing?
I did go fishing.
Yeah.
I caught a big couple big bonitos, which were nice. I made some fish tacos.
We love to catch bonitos.
We're trying to get other stuff, but yeah, it's funny. Driving a boat and trying to find fish in the ocean, which is big, is not super easy.
Yeah.
But did an okay job. We got to talk about a little Pac-12 media rights stuff. It's like coming to an end. Like, we really are almost to the end of the countdown.
Can I talk about something else first?
Oh, yeah. Go ahead. What would you like to do?
So I wanted to address something.
Okay.
Because
here, I'm going to put you on camera, and I will look at fixing your camera.
Sure. You do that. So we have some friends in the Big Ten that are going to be our friends shortly. They're Minnesota fans. They're Nebraska fans. They're Iowa fans and so on and so forth. But here's the deal. Now, the top of the Big Ten. So I was trying to assess based on the schedule release a couple weeks ago, you know, how tough is it going to be for USC and UCLA? And I'll say first year, it's going to be really tough for UCLA because they have to play both Ohio State and Michigan as well as USC in the first year of the Big Ten. But this is a big, important but. The Big Ten, the top end of it, very good, right? You got Ohio State, you got Michigan, you got Penn State, and then you've got really quality teams that kind of outplay their recruiting rankings in Wisconsin and Iowa pretty consistently, sort of like Utah's. They're a couple of Utah's. So that sucks. You got like a top five, and then you add USC to it. It's not going to be a ton of fun there at the top. The bottom half of the Big Ten is asshole. Like, it is dirty, rotten asshole. If you look at it, there are two programs that perform on average worse than Colorado, and they are Illinois and Rutgers. Purdue is ass. Indiana is ass. Maryland is ass. Northwestern is ass. And sorry to say it, Nebraska is ass. There are seven programs in that league that in the last 10 years are worse than ASU. They are ass.
Okay.
So.
But they've also made massive financial.
Yeah, Maryland just built a big-ass facility. You know what the Maryland coach said right after that?
Yeah, he said.
Yeah, we should have spent that money on NIL because nobody gives a shit. They'd get dressed in a trash can for if we were paying them $25,000 a year.
But like Nebraska ass hiring Matt Rhule. Like, okay. Like, I mean, that's like Arizona State's not hiring Matt Rhule.
Who'd they hire before that? The hottest group of five coach, Scott Frost?
Right.
And yeah. How'd that work out?
I'm just saying.
It's an ass program. Ass programs. There are seven ass programs in that league that anybody can take advantage of. All that matters, and this is what the friggin' west side of the Big Ten has proven for years, it's who you play in that league. You're playing a nine-game schedule, right?
Yes.
So in some years, you're going to have to, you know, bite the bullet, and you got to play two or three of the big four. And then in other years, you're just feasting on asshole. That sounds weird, but you're doing it. So I just wanted to say it to our Big Ten listeners. Love you. Half of your league sucks.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's gonna go well, I'm sure. Yes.
Anyway.
They're going to welcome us in with open arms. Way to go. Way to, like, you know, that's like you're moving into the neighborhood and
look, this is a little preview.
Instead of, like, bringing a bottle of wine.
A little,
like,
preview of our Big Ten podcast.
Yes. Instead of bringing a bottle of wine to your neighbor, you just drop a bag of, you know, paper bag full of dung and light it on fire.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's what you did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would say those schools, though, that, like, you know, Purdue makes big, you know, investments in coaching.
Okay, this is where we're getting into your weird thing where money is the only thing that matters.
It's not the only thing.
No, but it's actually very far down the list in terms of, like, you've got to have culture. You've got to have these things that are institutional investment in athletics beyond just where the media deal money comes in.
But, like, a guy like Matt Rhule has turned programs that were complete ass around, like a Temple and Baylor. And
Nebraska, like, since what's-his-face? Tom Osborne.
Bo Pelini was pretty good.
He was fine, but nine wins a year, and they've said, no, fuck you, to him.
Yeah.
Because he was only winning nine games a year. The culture is bad. And until they fix that, it's not going to matter who they hire. They could hire Nick Saban tomorrow, and they're not going to win at the level of Alabama.
Right, but they're going to turn things around. Like, Nebraska's going to be good with Matt Rhule. Like, that's, and just like Colorado, like, okay, you get Carl Durrell, you're probably going to suck. Oh, you get Coach Prime, changes the whole landscape. So I think it's just the investment. Like, you're giving yourself a much better chance to
whenever,
turn things around.
Whenever you can hire a guy coming immediately off of a failed stint in the NFL, I think you just got to do it.
He's
right?
turned around two crap programs in a hurry. So I would trust what Rhule's going to do there.
Yeah.
In Nebraska.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
we've never seen NFL stink just rub off on a guy when he returns to college at all.
I mean, Chip Kelly just got an extension, right? Like, he's that works. So, like, that's proving. I think that's proving our point here.
Uh-huh.
He just kind of walked into that one. Yeah, good stuff. All right. Well, we want to talk about some of the media rights stuff that's been going on. It's kind of weird, but it feels like things are happening in that world, right?
Can we get a soundbite of that? It's kind of weird, but it feels like things are happening.
It's not like breaking news. We have a buddy. You know, we have a bunch of friends. By the way, if you want to listen to the Cover 3 podcast feed, if you run out of episodes of the Podcast of Champions, Bud Elliott does a really nice job in his summer school, and you can go through if there's schools you're interested in, the school that you like playing other teams. He talks to all the 24/7 sports publishers across the country, and he's done a lot of the Pac-12 teams already to get a feel for what's going on. Something like what we do when we try to get guys on and preview the season or talk about spring football and stuff like that. It's pretty fun. Like, he had Adam Munster-Tiger on and, you know, talking about what's going on. He had Chris Cartman on. I was listening to that a little bit. But I think he does a nice job talking about it. Our buddy Jason Scheer, who covers Arizona, has sort of been, I don't know what to say, like the way he tweets about conference expansion and the Big 12, a lot of people feel like he's sort of getting some information from the Big 12 side. Well, he posted something on his message board this week, David. I don't know if you saw, but it made it over to uscfootball.com, and I saw it on Twitter and stuff. He was saying, according to sources, that he was hearing the Pac-12 media rights deal was as low as $22.5 million per school, which would be significantly lower than like the 31 point whatever that the Big 12 is getting right now. People are accusing him of being a troll and all this kind of stuff. That would be, if a number like that does come out, no matter what the distribution is, if it's all linear, I don't care. I think that's going to be a tough pill to swallow. I kind of not buying this one. I don't know. Did you see that, Dave? And what, do you have any thoughts on it?
That seems low. But I'd believe pretty much anything at this point. I shouldn't say that. I consider any of this stuff potentially valid at this point because there's nothing, there's no thing coming out of the Pac-12. And yeah, at a certain level, they could be running a really tight ship, you know? But have you followed this league? Or there's just nothing. And look, there's other data points we have that, like, they're not sharing stuff even when it would be beneficial to them to share it. They're not sharing stuff with a prospective member of the league. They're not sharing stuff. It seems as if whatever info is being shared is not consistent between the presidents of the league. Different stuff is being, we could have a deal by the end of this month. And I think that's been said like seven times since January.
December, I think.
Yeah. And it's just, I think... I think there's maybe some like soft, you know, off the record, we're feeling pretty optimistic that you buy depending on how gullible you are if you're a president. Until something gets announced, I don't consider it imminent. And then second, people could speculate all they want. I don't know Jason's sources. Maybe he has good ones. I just don't think if we were close enough to a deal to have a number of 22.5, it'd be leaking in other ways right now. Maybe that's something that's being talked about, but I have a hard time believing anything is close until, like, it's the Pac-12. I have to imagine it's going to be leaked in about 30 different ways when it's somewhat imminent.
Yeah. The only thing I could think of would be that's sort of like the number right now, and the work is trying to, what can we do to raise that number? And that sort of was like what was given. It's like, here's your number. And then Kliavkov's like, that's not going to work. What can we do? And trying to work behind the scenes to kind of come up with different stuff.
But that feels like a conversation that should have happened in like October. Like, I don't think now, I mean, in theory, they've been negotiating for how long?
Like December at least, you know?
Yeah. I thought it was last summer. Didn't they start all this crap last summer?
When did the – yeah, it's been a long time.
Whatever. But, like, this is – the time is now to be
– well, I think once USC and UCLA announced, so it was last June 30th.
June 30th.
Then I think things went in sort of lockdown mode, like, okay, we have to figure out what – you know.
But if you're still at the point where it's like, we can do 22.5, and you're like, no, that's not so good, well, like, how are we still at that point right now?
Yeah.
So anyway, it remains not good.
And I get the sequence of how they wanted this to go down, where you sort of get the media rights deal, you do the expansion, and then kind of go from there. But now that is sort of because this media rights deal has taken so long, we're getting kind of some overlap. And we've talked about the last, I think, month or so that San Diego State, which was, you know, the top of the list as far as expansion candidates go from all reports we've seen, they had a deadline that up until like a month ago, I don't think any of us were aware of. When they leave to announce, when they leave the Mountain West and make a formal notice to the Mountain West that they were going to leave, it's based on like I think it's like three times some of the revenue or something like that. Anyway, the number would be $17 million or $16.5 million for them to leave before June 30th. After that, once the calendar switches to July, that number doubles. So it's $34 million. And a lot of the talk out of San Diego State is, well, they wouldn't be able to afford to do that. And then you'd have to wait. You wouldn't be able to leave in 2024 when it would make a lot of sense. And so the weird thing that happened this last week, I think Pete Thamel was the first to break it, that San Diego State, this is really bizarre, gave the Mountain West notice. So there was a series of letters that went back and forth that the school intends to resign from the Mountain West Conference. They were also asking for a one-month extension. They were asking for payment plans for the exit fee. And apparently the Mountain West took it as, okay, so you're leaving. We're taking your like president or whatever off the board, or the AD or whatever is off the board. The payout, the $6 million payout you're supposed to get pretty soon, we'll hold that back for the exit fee. And the Mountain West, San Diego State's like, no, we're not this. We're just saying we're intending to leave. We just want an extension. There doesn't seem to be any reason for the Mountain West to grant that. It's kind of a weird move that maybe this was something you could have done behind the scenes instead of like writing a letter. And Thamel also said sources that the Mountain West Conference sent an additional letter on Friday informing the school at this time they would not approve any exceptions they requested last week. Additional month before departure, reduced exit fees, or the ability to pay out the exit fees in installments. So the Mountain West, according to sources, are saying no way. So San Diego State sort of like, I don't know, they might have overplayed their hand a little bit. I don't see a scenario where the Mountain West would just kick them out, but it's sort of like they're saying, hey, we're going to leave, but they don't really have a place to go. And you're like, I'm not renewing my lease, but you don't have your new house yet or your new apartment. And you're like, okay, well, now what? So it's very interesting. I don't know. Maybe the Pac-12 can sign some kind of deal within the next, 10 days before this deadline. But it's San Diego State could be kind of out, and there's no real reason for the Mountain West to play ball. But it was a very just kind of bizarre sort of happenings with – it just kind of makes you think like maybe the Pac-12's close. Getting that month extension, maybe it's supposed to be something in the next couple of weeks. I don't know. But I wanted to get your thoughts on what you make of all that, because it's a pretty bizarre story.
One, I think the subtext is pretty obvious, which is the Pac-12 is not sharing enough information with San Diego State for them to make a hard decision, a firm decision. I don't know what the efficacy of it. This felt very lawyerly to me. It felt like maybe trying to build a paper trail for the eventual finagling that will have to be done via legal negotiations. Like, well, we asked for this because of this, and they said this, and this is in the public record, and then it can also mount some public pressure in yes. theory. Like, you can get San Diego State fans to, and also maybe even. Because that's a California State University, maybe even get government involved in some way. Mm. So I would think that there'd be a lot of reasons to do it publicly that might not make sense from a, you're not going to get this, so what are you doing? But right. maybe it's to drum up either that support or force a public response from the Mountain West that might not be too good for them. So I don't know. We might not be seeing all of what they're trying to do, but I think the most important point for the Pac-12 is that they wouldn't be asking for that stupid thing if they thought that their media deal was going to be announced by the end of the month. Like, who was it who said that? Was it the Washington State guy? I get all these presidents confused.
Yeah.
They all say the same stupid shit all the time. Kirk Schultz?
I think it was him, yes.
Who said it was going to be done by the end of the month? I mean, what month, really?
At the end of a month.
At the end of a month, maybe.
Yeah.
I think you've got like three options, right? It could be the end, the beginning, or the middle of a month. Mm. And like, it, you know, it's squishy. I think if you're after the 18th, you could like squint and say that's the end of the month.
Sure.
So I think you've got a 12-day period at the end of every month. So there's like, what is that, 144 days a year where he could be right?
it's like a clock.
Yeah. So that's stop good. Clock. That's not bad. That's not bad odds.
Is 27 mid-20s or late 20s?
27. So I'm a big believer in that being late 20s.
Okay.
Because I'm 37 and I like to think of myself as late 30s.
Late 30s? Okay.
Yeah.
That's fair. I think so 24, 25, 26 mid.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I think I would go with
I
that.
Actually started hitting my buddy with when he turned 36 with you're in your late 30s now. you're closer to 40 than 30.
Nice.
Yeah.
I like that one. All right. Well, so we'll see. It's just a weird kind of move, but just the fact that that would happen, something's going on. Like, I don't think this is going to last two more months. Maybe it does. I mean, it's a Pac-12. Who knows? But it feels like with San Diego State sort of like, I just need a little more time, like that maybe there is something imminent. And at this point, is there – I don't know what the media rights deal would have to be to not – like, wouldn't you just want San Diego State anyway, no matter what? The success they've had athletically in the revenue sports, the investment they've made. I'm not sure why you couldn't just say, all right, we're gonna offer San Diego State to come in, no matter what. Like, no matter what the media rights deal is, why that couldn't be the case. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I would think that was it. There's also some talk, and we didn't really mention this last time, but the ACC, there was like a top half and a bottom half, like the haves and the have-nots. And they had like some little council meeting, trying to get out of their like locked in grant of rights thing that goes till 2036 or whatever it is. But one of the things that came out of those meetings was instead of having an unequal revenue share of just like the television money, they would do it for, like participation in postseason tournaments, like the NCAA tournament, the college football playoff. So if you are a participant, it's not just all of the money that you would get and bonuses would be split equally. You would get a higher percentage. So if Clemson goes to the playoff, they would get a higher percentage of the money you get. And that money is going to be more significant as they expand the college football playoff. The revenue from units from the NCAA tournament can be very significant. Something the ACC was implementing, and apparently from the reports we've seen in the Pac-12, that's something that looks like will be part of this deal as well. So if Utah is able to – you win the Pac-12 again and make the college football playoff, they would get a bigger portion of that money instead of just all of being split up. And I think it was Scott Barnes, the athletic director from Oregon State. I think he did it with the Oregonian. I apologize. I remember reading the story, but – he was in favor of doing that, having an uneven split. Basically, you're rewarding the programs that are making investments into their major sports. And if they have success in those sports, then they'd get an uneven split of the revenue. And he didn't want it to be where just the regular revenue coming in, like say the TV deal is $30 million, but we're going to give Oregon and Washington, $35 million, and some of these other schools are going to get a little less. He felt that would be an unequal split that way would weaken the conference overall, trying to help those teams. But he was definitely in favor of an unequal revenue split when it comes to postseason tournaments and things like that. But I felt it made sense, and I think that's something that would be smart, where you can reward teams that are having more success. Any thoughts on that, David?
Yeah, I mean, I'm fine with it. I think in a lot of the professional leagues, the success is its own success. Where when you win more games, you make more money as a university or as a program or a franchise or whatever it is. And then what actually happens in most leagues is that you are then penalized for that success
because of the draft or whatever.
Because of the way the draft works, because of talent acquisition, because most leagues recognize that. You need to prop up the have-nots to make for competitive contests that people want to watch. What's happening in college football is that there isn't that governor. So I'm actually I'm kind of opposed to the idea generally. I think in specific, I think for the Pac-12 prior to USC and UCLA's departure, maybe it would have made sense for survival's sake to do something unequal. But I think in large part, no, you need to have some sort of balance there. And if not, you actually need to hinge it the other way, where more money goes to the schools that are sucking. Because and it's not a people think of everything in a very I won't say stupid. I was going to say stupid, but I won't say stupid.
You pretty much did.
In a not very thoughtful way.
Okay.
About no, we need to get the money because our program needs to win, win, win. And it's like there's not going to be a sport to win, win, win if you just keep X-ing out the programs that aren't doing very well. You need those programs to play games that people want to watch. If there's, say, like in a league that UCLA and USC are going to, there's like seven schools, say, that are just absolute dog shit.
I've heard someone say that before.
Yeah, just pure tomato cans. Then those are seven games that don't matter. There's seven games that suck, and they just suck in perpetuity. Now, as I was saying, you can't just prop those schools up with cash. They need, you know, program, culture, the whole thing. But I don't think the answer is just continuing to make it unequal because – like say you did this, applied this to other leagues, say you applied it to, well, apply to the ACC.
Okay.
Clemson makes the college football playoff. Clemson's already really goddamn good.
Yep.
What does more money do for Clemson?
Well, I guess it gives them a chance to compete with
Alabama's. It gives them a chance to compete with Alabama. They beat twice in the college football playoff.
Right.
Yeah. But it separates them further from the league they're in. Makes those games matter even less. And how's the ACC doing? Like, do people like the ACC? Is it good quality football? Like, do people enjoy watching that fucking league? No, they don't.
Some people do, David.
No, they don't. No, and that's a testament to their media deal and all that stuff. But no, ACC football's a joke. The same way Pac-12 football's a joke.
We're a Pac-12 podcast, David.
We love you. Don't get us wrong.
Jesus. Who do you – do you like anybody? You insult the ACC, you insult the Big Ten, you insult the Pac-12, which we cover.
No, the Big Ten – the top level of the Big Ten is really tough. Okay. It's just there's seven programs in there that are absolute ass.
Yeah, but like – okay, so Cal is like ass, right? You go to Memorial Stadium and it's like there's not going to be that many people. Even if Nebraska's ass, you go and Lincoln's
look, I'm sorry that
they're full. The stadium's full.
I'm going to make the classic thing. I'm sorry there's nothing else to do there but watch a shitty team play football. But that's not my problem.
But there's different levels of support.
Who cares?
For a team that you call ass.
What are you talking about? Who cares? Who cares how many people want to watch a bad team play football?
Well, like if UCLA goes to Cal and like they stink, you're just like, it's not that crazy. You're like, okay, whatever.
It's crazy that Nebraska's bad. It is crazy.
But then you go to Nebraska, you play a similar ass team, like you would say. And it's a harder thing to do to travel that way and have all these fans screaming at you.
No, that's what I'm saying. They are it's not harder. It's demonstrably not harder in recent times.
But if you're on the road, it's a different environment. It's harder to play with 75,000 screaming fans as opposed to like,
they're screaming at their own team because their own team sucks.
A bunch of people sitting on Tightwad Hill just, you know.
No.
Chaining themselves to trees.
There's nothing more disconcerting in history than playing an old Stanford Stadium with 4,000 people in the stands and a track around the field so that it's just silent on the field. That would be disconcerting as hell. Loud crowds? That's normal.
All right.
And loud, polite crowds. Have you ever heard Nebraska crowds?
They're polite.
They're like cheering for your team. It's great.
They're polite.
Yeah. Well, they don't have a good program.
Any other groups you want to insult while we're here? Like before?
Well, I guess going back to it, my point is for propping up all these, the reason all the professional leagues do it is because it's better for the bottom line. They're not doing it out of altruism. It's better for the bottom line if you're doing this long term. Now, everyone's a short term thinker. Everyone's got a stupid venture capitalist mindset. But it's better for the long term if you prop up everybody.
Yeah. All right. I want to talk about, because it's a big recruiting month, and by the way, if you are a fan of any of the Pac-12 schools, go to the 24/7 site for the school that you like, and if you're not a subscriber, you can get 50% off an annual subscription right now, so it's a great deal going on, I think, for a few more days, so go check it out. Go sign up there. So you love Oregon State, go over to beaverblitz.com, sign up for a VIP membership. So you can do that across the board on all the 24/7 sports sites. But June is a big recruiting month. You know, we now have official visitors and things going on. I thought the recruiting rankings were kind of interesting, so I wanted to kind of get your thoughts, David, because I know you cover recruiting and stuff as well. Have you looked at them recently?
Give me more context. You mean for like the overall rankings?
The Pac-12. For the Pac-12.
I haven't in a minute.
Okay, so don't look.
Okay.
I'm going to put up on the screen where they are right now as of this morning. I took a screenshot.
Okay.
Who do you think is the top rated class in the Pac-12?
USC?
No, Oregon Ducks.
Okay.
Yeah, so we'll do
Oregon Ducks.
All right, who do you think is the number two?
USC.
Stanford Cardinals. Oh.
What?
They've been murdering the game.
They've been good. Okay, so Oregon has 16 commitments, 11 four-stars. Stanford is up there with 22 commitments. They've been on a tear lately. They just picked up Brown, the quarterback from Mater Dei, four-star quarterback. But 22 commitments there. So Troy, is it Troy Taylor, right? Taylor.
Yes, they have hired a head coach. His name is Troy Taylor.
Troy Taylor doing some work there, putting some life back into the Stanford program, which is pretty cool. You mentioned USC, they're number three.
USC Trojans.
11 commits, I think 8 are four stars. So it's not a big numbers, but they've come on. I think 8 of those commitments came in the past 3 weeks, so they've been pretty big on that. How about number four?
Arizona or Colorado?
Colorado Buffaloes.
Yeah, only 8 commits, but 4 of them are 4-stars, so they're getting some quality players in there. And you mentioned number 5.
Arizona Wildcats.
Wow. 1 4-star, but they got 13 commitments, so building up some momentum there for Jed Fish. And then who would round out the top 6?
It's nothing but trash underneath that.
I won't quiz you the whole way, but we'll ask you number 6.
I'm going to go... UCLA?
Arizona State Sun Devils.
Damn, not even a top half program anymore.
Not yet. Arizona State, 11 commitments, no 4-stars yet, but building some momentum. Right now, it's early. The numbers aren't there. You mentioned UCLA, number 7.
Oh, UCLA Bruins.
6 commits, 1 of them a 4-star. Number 8.
Oregon State Beavers.
6 commitments there. Number 9.
Utah Utes.
Only 4 commits for the Utes. One of them is a 4-star, so not much there. Number 10. We're getting really down there.
California Golden Bears.
5 commitments. No 4-stars or anything yet. Number 11.
Washington State Cougars.
4 commitments. And then last, just kind of weird.
Not kind of.
Washington Huskies.
What's going on?
1 commitment.
Yeah.
So not ideal.
But he's a 4-star.
That's true. 4-star.
Packy Fino.
I listened to Chris Fetters on the... excuse me, on the summer school with Bud Elliott, and a lot of detail like Chris likes to give. But just seems like, you know, offense is going to be really good. They got one of the best receiving cores in the country, certainly the conference. And then seems like there's a lot of upside on the defense too. So front 7, I think a lot of guys are back and there's a lot of promise there. They lost some dudes in the secondary, but oh man, Washington could be pretty good. Sometimes you talk to people and they're like, I think Washington's overrated, but seems like a lot of talent there, and they're going to have a really fun offense. So,
yeah,
should be cool.
Agreed.
So what's the biggest surprise from there?
Washington's definitely the biggest one, and then the other one is obviously Stanford at number 2. They've obviously been recruiting a ton, and they had a visit weekend a couple weekends ago where a lot of this, even the recent commitments, are coming still from that weekend, where they just. I think they got 6 commits coming right out of the weekend. It was one of those just kind of big days that probably, you know, the 4 Stanford fans, when they get together, they're going to talk about for years to come. But yeah, I mean, it seems like they're recruiting with a lot of energy. Like people are talking about Troy Taylor. They're talking about that staff.
Yeah.
And what they're pitching to guys is a lot of like kind of up-tempo, like changing kind of the brand of Stanford. So we'll see if it works. You know, that the academic cachet for Stanford is always going to be a prime driver for parents especially, but some of these kids too. And if they can match that even a little bit with not being an egregious piece of crap on the field, then, yeah, Stanford. The fact that Stanford was so bad for so long and then got so bad again is really – it shouldn't be like that because, you know, there's a lot of schools with some good academics, but none of them compare to the reputation of Stanford.
Sure.
The draw that they have nationally with any kid with, you know, academic minded parents or who is academic minded himself. They should always be able to recruit pretty well. They should always be able to recruit certain positions very well. And end result is they should have a pretty good program.
Yeah. John put in the chat, not really a question, but he seems really optimistic about the Pac-12. He says there's no Pac media deal, and there will be no acceptable media deal. After all, the Pac-12 BS media deal hype dies, so will the Pac. Wow.
Mm.
Doesn't maybe a big 12 fan or something? I mean, I think there's going to be a deal. People want to see, you know, people are going to want to see Oregon football and Washington and Utah and all that. There's going to be a deal. How good is it going to be? We don't know.
No.
One of the biggest storylines of the offseason, and it's hard to not talk about Colorado, David, when we do a Pac-12 show with Coach Prime. So as of now, there are 10 scholarship players back on the roster for 2023. So that's 11.8% of the Buffalo's roster will have played in Boulder previously when they make their home debut September 9th against Nebraska. They've added 50 players from the transfer portal and also 19 players from the high school ranks. So pretty big shakeup on the Colorado side. And, you know, there's been some, you know, Pat Narduzzi threw some shade at Coach Prime, the way he's rebuilding the roster. You know, USC last year rebuilt it completely similar probably to what Arizona State's doing this year with Kenny Dillingham. But what, you know, Deion Sanders is doing is completely different. It's like a whole nother world. Even though what USC did last year seemed like a whole nother world, this is now, you know, just another stratosphere. He was on with Joel Klatt. And one of the quotes he had was, "They just want to take a shot at me." So he's talking to some of the coaches that were throwing shade his way. "They just want to take a shot at me, and I'm good with that. They know what it is, what it was at Colorado last year. This is their opportunity to take a shot, but they better shoot now because in a moment, you're not going to be able to shoot." And he also said, "I don't understand how you would think that the coaching staff is the only thing that deserved to change. Now, when you rid yourself of the entire coaching staff, you think you're going to keep all the kids? That doesn't make sense to me. And that just doesn't make sense whatsoever when the previous staff was responsible for securing those kids. That's not the way the game is played with us." So kind of defending what he was doing and saying, you know, if you want to chirp, chirp now because we come in again, is what he was saying.
Yeah, I mean, I don't – again, I said this before. I don't hate the idea of cutting a bunch of guys. It's the way it was done, I mean, according to some of these players, was – you know, a little bit, just kind of
the way you did it. You could, yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty harsh.
Just kind of being a dickhead. And so, you know, you can learn a guy's name and still cut him from your team. you know, that sort of stuff. So yeah. Anyway, but no, I don't think he really has much to defend. I mean, it's what needed to be done. I mean, that program was really low on talent. They needed to, you know, cut ties to a lot of those guys. And also you've got a culture of losing. You need to change that. So
yeah,
it was a historic change, but it was also a historically bad team. And it's probably one of the first historically bad teams that hired a coach who has the juice to actually turn over the roster like that in a single offseason. So, of course, he did it. You know, it's the transfer portal era, and that team was one of the worst we've ever seen. And I wasn't kidding about that last year. It was truly that bad.
Yeah.
It's amazing that Cal lost to them because Cal's pretty bad, but not that bad. The other big story with Deion Sanders.
Okay.
Is that he might have his left foot amputated.
Yeah, I saw about that because he had a couple toes.
Yeah, he had two toes amputated at some point due to poor circulation issues.
Okay.
And now he might have the left foot amputated.
Man.
At least that's how it's being reported. It feels a little sensationalist, so I don't know, but that's how it's being reported.
Yeah. You could still run with like a prosthetic.
I mean, I bet he could beat me in a race.
I was going to say, like, he could probably still beat us both.
I mean, without the prosthetic, he could probably beat me on a stump.
Yeah, I mean, one of the fastest football players around, right?
Yeah. No, you could actually like attach like a brick to his foot and he could probably beat me in a race.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hopefully, you know, his whatever medical issues, they go smoothly. And I'm really curious to see what this team is going to look like. Obviously, they come out the gates with a crazy schedule. You know, you're playing Nebraska, you're playing TCU, you're playing Oregon, playing USC. Like, man, that's just not an easy road out of there. So we'll see how that ends up going. But check out on the summer series, Adam Munster Tiger does a nice job kind of breaking down the roster. And it's definitely different. I mean, it's hard to talk about a team when it's like there's only 10 guys back. Because most of what you talk about when you talk about a team is like, oh, that guy was good. He's back. He's back.
Right.
And now it's all about like, well, this guy's coming in. This guy's coming in. It's, you know, he didn't play here, but he was a 4-star guy, or he played a whole bunch at this smaller school, and how will that translate to the Pac-12 and all that? So it's a lot harder to kind of preview this team. So just it's going to be get your popcorn ready and watch because it could be a lot of fun. You know, but outside of Shedeur Sanders, from what Munster Tiger was saying, he's like, that's probably the biggest drop-off is his quarterback. So they got to keep him healthy and then see how he makes that transition because he had a lot of talent around him in a pretty bad FCS league in the SWAC, and so guys would be wide open. Can he do that at the Pac-12 level? We'll have to wait and see. All right. Well, I think that's it for what I had. Well, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back and answer questions. So back in a minute. All right, David Woods.
We're back.
We are back. We didn't get any voicemails this week. So leave us a voicemail. The number is 424-532-0678. I think we got a couple text messages. But I believe the first email is from West Texas Mike in Vegas. Penix on Peacock. He said, during the podcast, I wrote, so you're going to have to pay up to see a little Penix, or he probably meant Penix, on Peacock action. Because he was talking about the Washington Michigan State game being on Peacock. But I think YouTube thought something was a foul and blocked it. I got to admit, I hate Penix humor, or Penix humor, but figured I'd say it since David had zoned out during that discussion. He tends to zone out during discussions, yes.
It's true. I have the attention span of a...
We can read your email. We just couldn't read. I guess YouTube didn't allow your comment.
Little Penix on Peacock.
Yeah,
it's a peacock. Isn't that what a penix is at the end of the day?
A peacock. I don't want to.
Took you a second.
I don't want to go there. Okay.
Oh boy. Yeah. Oh boy.
Another show later. Yeah, if you guys really want more USC stuff at noon, we'll do another live show.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah.
All right, this is a text message. Hey, guys, long time. We have no idea who you are because you didn't sign this. I had a few questions. One, with UCLA and USC moving to the Big Ten, the consensus is that both programs will suffer and pick up extra losses per year. But with their natural slash unnatural advantages, what is the potential they could actually rise up and fulfill their potential and remain slash raise to an elite level like Michigan and Ohio State? What would it take for each program what would it take for each program? I'm just going to skip that.
Yeah, yeah.
To accomplish that. Okay. I'm going to start here.
Okay.
Both programs will, in fact, suffer and pick up extra losses every year because they have to travel thousands of miles to the east.
I'm not going to disagree with you there.
Over and over again. It's just facts. I mean, it's not disagreement. It's just facts. It's pure facts. You can disagree with facts. That's fine.
It's not facts.
Yeah, it's facts.
We've never seen something like this in college football.
It's facts. It's facts only.
Okay.
It's going to be losses. Lots more. And by lots more, I mean like on average, like 0.2 more per year over like a 10-year time span, but it will be more. Now, to take advantage of the move, I mean, I'll start speciously. They need to move their campuses about 2,000 miles to the east. But barring that, I like the idea of building some sort of facility that they could both share out in like Illinois or something, like in the Chicagoland area.
So no, that they could.
If you've got, especially for like the other sports, for like basketball or for any of these sports that are going to be doing road trips versus just a single game. So they don't have to fly back and forth in between.
You could do remote learning and all that kind of stuff.
I think that would help performance in other sports. I don't see it being realistic for football because you're probably not going to have back-to-back roadies that take you into Big Ten country.
Right.
But you might. Who knows?
But if you had like Northwestern and like Purdue and back-to-back road weeks and you could stay there for the week and
– I don't – so I'm I know I sound a little doom and gloom about the whole thing. I don't think you can fight geography at that level. Like, there's just a simple reality to this that you can hire the best coaches, you can upgrade those facilities, and you can go NIL crazy. But the reality is it's a toll for professional athletes to do the west to east multiple time zone trips. Like, that's a big haul, and you're asking, you know, a bunch of college kids to do it 4 times a year. It's a lot.
I think the charters will help, and probably leaving a day earlier will help. You know, like I know that's been an issue. Even USC NFL going to Notre Dame.
NFL teams leave on Mondays, and there's still like a demonstrable decline in performance when they're traveling.
I don't think they leave on Monday, but
they leave super friggin' early. I saw the Dolphins practicing at UCLA for their game on a Sunday on a Wednesday. It doesn't demonstrably change performance if you get there like just a few days earlier, and we're talking about a single day.
Yeah.
Like, I think people are hand-waving that as if it's not a huge deal, and it really, really is. And not, I don't, like, I'm a humanist at heart, but I don't really care about how it's going to feel for the players. I'm talking about the wins and losses. Like, it will affect performance. Like, it's hard on athletes. Okay, well, lots of this is hard on athletes, and it always has been. Like, traveling to Oregon is hard on athletes. But this will actually change performance. Their sleep cycles are going to be weird. Like, it's just, I think people are discounting it. They're just kind of discounting what the impact is going to be wins and losses wise.
Yeah. There's like kind of a built-in, you know, some disadvantages built in when you travel, when the plane's longer, if there's a longer bus ride afterwards. This adding, you know, some of the trips aren't that much longer than going to the Pacific Northwest, but there's the time zone difference for sure. Like, that's, you know,
that's the part that messes people up. Like, traveling up to Washington, it's just you're on a 2-hour flight and then you're just away from home. I think people actually are like talking about the flight itself, and I don't think that really matters. I mean, I think some of it is just being on the road. And so that happens no matter where you're going on the road. There's a reason why UCLA's win percentage in the UCLA-USC rivalry is much worse at the Coliseum than it is at the Rose Bowl. Because it's a road atmosphere. Because it's a change in your routine. When you add in like some of the body clock stuff, it just adds to that effect. Yeah. So now on the other end, UCLA and USC will get the advantage of those teams coming to LA.
Yeah.
It's just in aggregate, those teams only have to make one of those assy road trips a year, whereas UCLA and USC are going to have to make, you know, between 4 and 5. Well, no, between 3 and 4, depending on the year.
Yeah. It goes on, right?
Yes, it goes on. Everything goes on. One of the schools you cover has a reputation for being generally good at football but plagued by scandals, and the other has spurts of good times and has a cleaner reputation but not as good as its rival and can't stay out of its own way from an administration standpoint. Which you'd rather have, and does the negative ever overshadow the positive for the each of you?
I mean, would you rather have? I mean, I'd just rather be the better program.
Like, I mean, from a business standpoint, I would rather be covering the USC football program because they're currently riding high.
Yeah, and even the scandals are like that for us business wise. It's better to cover
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so
if you're squeaky clean and mediocre, yeah, nobody gives a crap.
Yeah, I mean, our UCLA site does shockingly well given the 20 years that UCLA's had. But USC's doing pretty well right now. So I guess that being said, I mean, I attended one of these schools. I've got a built-in bias that would probably prevent me from ever doing a I won't say a good job, but a fair and even-handed job with the other.
You want to come work for me, David?
Yeah, it'd be fun. So yeah, I don't know, but I think the so from like a fan perspective.
I could see you on the USC beat. That'd be fun.
Yeah. From a fan perspective, like if I'm putting myself in the shoes of a fan covering one of these, following one of these teams, I mean, if we're isolating to just football, I don't know why you would pick UCLA.
Yeah.
I can't think of a reason, actually.
All right.
So anyway, if it's not like instilled in you from like a young age, I don't know why you would pick UCLA over USC.
You're dragging this question out.
Sorry. Three, regarding basketball, is there any chance the international recruiting will become a circus like high school basketball is? Yeah. I mean, there's a chance. So international recruiting. So the reason he's asking this is because UCLA has started to recruit internationally pretty heavily in the basketball arena because recruiting AAU has basically just turned into how much money are you giving me in NIL? It's like the first question. And then, you know, you got to kiss their ass for like a year and a half before they'll even commit to your school, even if you're in UCLA. So it ends up being kind of a pain in the butt. International has been a little bit easier on UCLA. But if more and more schools figure that out, then the circus will come into town. People are the same no matter where you go. Yeah. So I think you'll find some circusy, but it was good for Mick Cronin to figure that out and pivot a little bit. Four, if international recruiting starts taking off or even now, do you see 247 bulking up its coverage, and how do you think that would impact your respective sites? I mean, I don't see them hiring a guy to be their international guy. Maybe they'll pay somebody who's currently covering it to like do a little extra for 247.
Yeah, I don't think it would change that much.
Or fly out the experts for like one or two additional tournaments a year, which would be a great job. But cool. I don't think them like opening up base of international operations. Basketball, I'm not going to say it like doesn't move the needle, but it's the same thing. If you just think of 247 as essentially the same sort of thing as one of these schools, yeah, basketball drives a little bit of revenue, but it's not the driver football is. They're not going to be making huge business decisions based on basketball.
Right.
Five, at Dave, when TP retires, Tracy Pearson, are you going to take over, bro? God, I don't know. Maybe. Who knows? TP's never going to retire. Tracy's going to be working at Bro until he is 170 years old.
Wow.
He is an ageless paragon of virtue.
Paragon of virtue. Nice. By the way, that was from Choney because he also sent another group of text messages from the same number. Number one of the second text message, with the influx of a lot more money going into the USC and UCLA and USC programs, where do each of you think it should go? And where do the two of you think it realistically will go? Are schools allowed to use that for NIL directly or donate to collectives?
So on the second part, no.
No, they're not allowed to do that
yet. On the first part, I think they should de facto donate it to NIL by taking on. So I think what UCLA should do is all of the current things that are donor funded, you know, all whatever, facilities, interest payments on coach buyouts, whatever it is. All of that should be taken up by the university with the media funds because so those donors can then put it into NIL.
It's really hard for the schools to like tell donors to go do something else, but they got to do it. You're right. They have to do it.
And that's what they should do. What they are going to do is not that. They're going to continue to inflate salaries. They're going to continue to spend on things inside the university, and they're continue to balance their budget rather than invest it in NIL. And that goes for every school. I'm not just talking about UCLA and USC, but there's a lot of institutional mindset that prevents people from making the correct decision. And what I'm really talking about is the money should go to the players. It's not going to.
Right.
It's going to go to things that are, like, in theory, in support of the players, but it's not actually going to go to the players.
Yeah, I think it's like, I agree with David. You got to figure out ways for it, more of it to go to the players. I think a lot of it's going to go to travel, and probably a lot of it trying to help mitigate any of the disadvantages you have of being an Olympic sport and having to travel that much. I was at an NIL event last night that, like, Lincoln Riley was at, and Dane Blanton, who's USC's beach volleyball coach. They've won the last three national championships. The Big Ten doesn't have beach volleyball. I think Nebraska is, like, starting a team. And basically, USC and UCLA have won every national championship since it became an NCAA sport. And those two schools are basically going to be without a conference. It didn't seem like the Pac-12 would be welcoming them back to play the other Pac-12 programs. So what he was saying was, like, they're going to try to, like, USC and UCLA and, like, Nebraska and maybe get a couple other teams. And, like, you need at least, I think it was five teams to form a conference. There's going to be weird stuff like that that's probably going to need some, you know, some funds to help. So you have, USC and UCLA, very successful beach volleyball programs. They're kind of going to be out on an island. They don't really have a conference to be in. So there's going to be expenses like that, trying to figure out what you need to do. So I think travel and things like that. But I agree with David. Like, you got to figure out a way to kind of maybe ease some of the donor requirements and let that money go to players until the point where the schools can actually start paying the players, which will happen, but it's not happening.
They very literally don't have an excuse, because what you just said, the travel, right? Yeah, that stuff costs more. If you're not baking that into the money that you're getting, and if you're not saying, well, we're still going to have a huge surplus, we're still going to have a huge profit from doing this, then why are you doing it?
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's going to be a lot of knock-on effects of switching to a conference where the closest school is like 2,000 fucking miles away. that needed to be baked into your analysis, or else you were a dumbass for doing this. Yeah, that stuff's going to cost more. Charter flights are going to cost more. Building a facility in Chicago is going to cost more. Okay. So there should be leftover money, right?
Yeah.
And with that leftover money, are you just going to give an extra $2 million to the same staff that got you here? Or are you going to invest it in the thing that's actually going to cause you some success and also be more equitable, which is giving it to players?
Yeah. And just know that this is going to change. At some point, schools are going to be able to be more directly involved. This is sort of like a temporary thing. At least in my opinion. But
yeah, they're going to play players.
And then one last thing from Choney. You probably answered this already, but what games on the 2024-2025 schedules are you most excited about?
So you must be talking about the USC and UCLA schedules.
I think so. This seems very USC-UCLA centric.
Okay. Well, for UCLA, it's actually none of the Big Ten dog shit. I'm actually most excited for at LSU.
Okay.
Yeah.
For SC, I would start with that too. Let me pull up the...
Yeah, aren't they playing LSU in Vegas that same year?
They play LSU in Vegas to start the season. So that 2024 is a crazy one for USC. They play Vegas, in Vegas, LSU. At home, they have Michigan, Notre Dame, Iowa, and Wisconsin. And then they go to Penn State on the road. So it's a pretty awesome schedule.
Dude, UCLA, are you ready for this?
Yeah.
UCLA has to go at LSU, at Iowa, at Michigan, and then gets Ohio State and USC at home.
Crazy.
Yeah. And then in addition to that, they've got a Hawaiian road trip, but they got to go 3,000 miles the other way.
That's a lot of travel.
They've got six road games.
Yeah. USC's first year is more home. They got some long road trips, but the Penn State one's tough. That's a hard one.
UCLA is going to be one of the top, like, two worst schedules in the country.
It'll be pretty bad. And 2025, I think they're going to Wisconsin, which I'd love to go check out Madison, jump around and all that stuff. I'd love to see that. And they go to Ohio State to the Horseshoe, which I've been there before. That was a great environment. I was on the field for that, like, filming. But that, yeah, like 2009, like Matt Barkley's first game, I believe it was, but they beat Ohio State that year. And that was pretty crazy. So those are some of the big ones, but for me, the 2024 one, it looks really exciting, especially a lot of great home games. And,
And for 2025, it'll again go none of the Big Ten shit. They get Georgia at home.
Oh, so
that'll be fun.
Wow.
Rose Bowl, okay. To open the season.
But is UCLA playing Ohio State and Michigan?
This, yeah, 2024, they play Ohio State and Michigan.
Okay.
Yeah. 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 In 2025, they go at Penn State and then don't get Ohio State or Michigan. So that'll be a slightly easier schedule. But again, six road games that year. They go at UNLV, and then they have five Big Ten conference road games.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, for USC, because of the Notre Dame thing, they basically have every year, it's like a Big Ten one, right? So there's like five road, their easiest year is when they have UCLA and the Rose Bowl, because it's like a road game, but it's not that far.
USC and UCLA are going to need to change drastically their scheduling practices. Now, USC doesn't have a ton of flexibility, but...
Unless they want to drop Notre Dame, or Notre Dame joins the Big Ten, that would help.
They have to get Notre Dame to join, or...
Yeah.
It needs to literally never be a good non-conference game outside of Notre Dame. It needs to be two patsies at home every single year. Yeah. And for UCLA, frankly, it needs to be three at home every single year. And that's just how a non-conference is going to have to be, because just too many miles.
Yeah, the travel is like, that would definitely help if Notre Dame joined the conference, because then it would probably be a protected rival, or however they're going to do the schedule, and then... You would have only four road games, you know, one year, as opposed to, five sometimes. So,
all right, this is from Anthony. Hi, Ryan and Dave.
Yeah.
What are your opinions?
Okay.
Thank you, Anthony. If a man is dating a woman with kids, is he wrong for going to her house with dinner for two, or is he obligated to feed her kids as well? This is quite the, so this feels like an internet meme of some sort that we are probably out on, but...
And we don't know. We'll probably say the exact wrong thing.
Well, the obvious answer is he is wrong. Like, if she's got... So, all right, hang on. It's a date where does she have somebody babysitting the kids, or are you just going over to hang out? If you're going over to hang out, you got to bring dinner for four.
Yeah.
Right? How is this a question?
So I think, unless it's like a late dinner and the kids are young and you're putting them to bed or something, or like you said, there's
if you're dating a woman with two kids, you've got to be putting on your like dad pants if you're dating her, right? Like, because you've got to be like, I'm auditioning.
You're probably bringing over like pizza for everybody.
You're auditioning for a role. This isn't dating. Like, you are auditioning for a job.
Yeah.
You need to show up like you're interviewing.
The only way would be if it's like they're young kids and they go to bed early and she's putting them to bed, and then we're going to have a romantic dinner like after the kids are in bed. Like, that would be the only scenario, I think, where you'd just have it for two. It could be where you bring like...
How late are you eating dinner? When are you eating dinner? What the hell are we talking about?
I don't know. You can bring over
like
happy meals for like the kids, and they're in the living room like playing on their iPads, and you have like a fancier dinner for your date. Like, you could do something like that. But yeah, I don't think the kids have to be involved unless they're like going to bed.
Yeah.
I would say this.
Yeah. No. And you are, but that's also like, you know what you're getting into at that point. Like, you're not casually dating a woman with two kids.
Right. It's probably better to be like, get a babysitter and then take her out.
You know, that's a nice thing to do. Right. Why don't you you throw down for a babysitter so you guys can go out?
There you go. That would be
that'd be a chivalrous thing to do.
That's two single guys dating advice. So
yeah. Good God.
All right. This is from Ross. Pick me. Hey guys, if you had to pick one remaining Pac-12 school for your team to play on a yearly basis, once they leave, who would it be? With the understanding, you have to go to every away game and sit with the opponent's fans. So apparently we're not working the games. We would have to go and sit. So I guess we get the week off. We don't have to work. We just go sit with the fans. So Pac-12, where would I want to go most?
I think I'd want to consistently go to Boulder.
I was thinking Boulder.
Seattle? That stadium's just cool.
Seattle would be cool, because if I'm not working, I could sailgate.
Yeah.
Seattle might be a good one, because then it's like a fun weekend, too.
I'd probably go Colorado or Washington.
Yeah, I could do Tempe, too. I could do like...
Yeah, I'm not a desert rat like you are.
Hang out in Mill Ave.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are good ones. Anyone else that you would want to...
No.
Like, would you want to do... I don't want to sit like...
No, I love Oregon the program, Oregon the fan. Whew. Tough one for the
Stanford.
Attending
the tailgating would be freaking awesome, though. You could do Stanford. It'd be chill, like lots of parking, like amazing tailgating.
Tailgating at Stanford's fun, but there's, you know.
Like RJ hooks me up, man, with like an amazing, like I love going there. I'm going to miss that probably the most.
Not Cal.
Nah. It's just so hard to get, like you're driving through these, you know, hilly streets to get to the stadium.
And yeah.
People chaining themselves to trees. I don't know.
They got the stupid cannon. And my niece operates.
Oh, I would like Tightwad Hill, though. That would be kind of fun.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's true. All right. This is from Coach B. Colorado win total. Hey, my dudes. Why is Colorado's over-under at 3.5? It seems like all the national podcasts think 5 wins is successful. I'm not saying that is wrong, but it feels like we are judging this version of Colorado based on last year's performance, but they only have like 10 people left, including coaches from that team. Have Michigan State, USC, and Florida State showed us that this is a bowl team? Lincoln Riley went from 4 to 11 wins. Why is it so wild to expect Prime goes from 1 to 5? Coach B. Also, what's up with San Diego State announcing they are leaving the Big Mountain West? Does that mean anything for the Pac-12? Any chance we see them in the Big 12? Okay. There's a lot going on here. So for Colorado, I think for me, a big part of it is the schedule. The
schedule is really tough.
The schedule is not easy.
And it's tough at the beginning. So you probably have some thin ranks at different position groups, and they might be beat up by the time you get to the easier part of the schedule.
Yeah. And while I will say Colorado has overhauled its roster and made it a lot better, it is not a top tier roster.
No.
Like they've got some pieces that are really good. They've got some holes. They've got the profile, if you just kind of looked at it, of a program that should go 7-5 with a pretty good schedule, like with an easy schedule. They should be a bowl team. With an easy schedule, they'd be a bowl team. And no question about it. But I don't see a roster that's competing with the top tier of the Pac-12 this year in any of those games. So if that's not the case, then they're in that morass of teams that should go anywhere from 5-7, 4-8 to 7-5, 8-4. And we just, you won't really know until a few of these things swing one way or the other. But going at TCU to start the season, that's going to be tough.
Yeah,
Nebraska coming to town, even though Nebraska's a dog shit program, like we talked about earlier, they still have talent.
A really good coach.
2-1 in non-conference, but then they're going to lose to Oregon. They'll probably lose to USC at home. So that's 2-3 at ASU. If you want to be generous, call that a win, but it's on the road. So let's say that's a 50-50 game. Stanford at home is a win. So that's, let's say 3-3 with a 50-50. Then at UCLA, that's a loss. That's 3-4 with a 50-50. Oregon State at home.
It's going to be tough.
It's going to be tough. I'll call that 50-50 just because it's at home.
I don't know about 50-50.
Yeah, I don't know either. I think that might be a loss. So you're at 3-6, right? Or is that 3-5?
3-6 with a couple 50-50s, you said.
Yeah, so it's just there's a lot here that
I think I'd go over 3.5.
Yeah, definitely over 3.5.
I think 4-8's more likely than anything.
Yeah, there's plenty of reason for them to outperform 3.5. I think that's one of the best bets you can find right now.
Nice. And we already talked about like the Mountain West stuff.
Yeah. Right?
Okay. We have a couple YouTube questions.
Sure.
First up, Chris Grossman. How could the Pac-12 get a media deal when the companies bidding on it don't know what they will be getting?
I mean, it doesn't take too much extrapolation to guess as to what they're getting. And also, you should be able to get it in a few different forms, right? Like, okay, here, give us a proposal with all 10 schools. Give a proposal with San Diego State. Give us a proposal with San Diego State and SMU or whatever it is. And what do those look like?
Yeah.
And then we can take it to them and make this work. Now, maybe they're not willing to play ball at that level, but I can't see why they wouldn't. Like, I mean, they can lowball them and say, well, no, we're going to give you this. And
yeah.
But that's what negotiations are. Like, it's just normal stuff. So I don't see why putting together like a scenario package would be that difficult for any of these potential buyers. I can't see why this would be that difficult. I think it's arriving at the number they want is probably the most difficult part of this.
Yeah, and it seems like they're trying to do it for 10. Like, here's what we have with our 10. Here's the deal. And then, okay, what would it be with 11 or 12 or all that? So, and then we got one last one. Philip Maz says, what non-USC-UCLA game are you most excited to attend this season? I mean, we probably won't be attending. We'd mostly be watching because we're covering.
I won't be attending any games. Certainly not a non-UCLA game.
I've really enjoyed going to the Pac-12 championship game. Like, that's been fun. It was Oregon, Utah 2 years ago I went. And then last year, USC and Utah. That was definitely fun. But, like, watching, I mean, the Washington-Michigan State game is going to be good. Certainly the Florida-Utah game, I want to see that.
Arizona-Mississippi State, baby.
Arizona-Mississippi State. Like, all those big out-of-conference, you know, early out-of-conference games that we've talked about a bunch of times before. Looking forward to all of those, for sure. Does UCLA doesn't have one this year, right? Not like a big one or anything?
No.
And then I think in conference, I mean, some of the major ones, like, you know, when Utah comes to SC, I mean, that you don't get involved that one, but like that might be something for David. Oregon, Washington, I mean, Oregon State, Oregon again, you know, that'll be good. I mean, any Colorado game, you know, Colorado, probably Colorado, Nebraska more than Colorado at TCU, because I just think that'll not be pretty. But I think the Nebraska-Colorado one with all the old rivalry stuff, that, I think it's more winnable. That could be a really fun one, I think, to watch.
Yeah, I agree.
Any other ones you want to?
No, I can't think of any.
All right. Well, let's wrap it up. Yeah, thanks for everyone for tuning in and listening to us on the podcast of champions. We are counting down to the San Diego State deadline. So we got like 10 days. Who knows? Maybe we'll have a media deal by the next time we record this or not. We just don't know. But
I think it'll be August 7th.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm thinking July. I'm thinking before Pac-12 Media Day.
No.
Pac-12 Media Day, Vegas, by the way. Did you book your stuff?
Yes.
Okay, so you're going. Oh, yeah, you told me where you're staying.
Well, we'll put it at 50-50 whether I'm going, but yes, I've booked it.
But you
booked
stuff.
Yeah.
I think I'm booking it later today or something. But yes. Should be fun. I'm excited because it's Vegas.
Should be great.
All right. Well, let's wrap it up. For David Woods, I am Ryan Abraham. Hope you guys enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
Goodbye.